on tonight's episode of the Live a Mullet podcast. Join me, the Mullet, as we chat about one of the great, epic martial arts extravaganzas, a film that is beyond your expectations, called Shogun Maeda, starring and produced by Shokasugi. This is his amazing, operatic fantasy, where we see him travel from Japan in the feudal era to Spain, where he is there to pick up some guns for his lord, Ieyasu. But of course, he runs into pirates, and of course, corrupt officials and more. There's intrigue, there's romance, and there's of course martial arts action. All in this epic film, Shogun Maeda. Howdy, howdy, folks. Welcome back to the Lethal Mullet podcast. Brought to you by, of course, Lethal Mullet Network. And, of course, our friends at Fandom Podcast Network as well. All part of the nice, big, same family, same channel. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the Lethal Mullet. And today, we have an epic beyond your expectations and imagination. Particularly when it comes from Shokasugi. Shokasugi, obviously, he is known as the actor that really brought, I suppose, the ninja craze to the most popularity in the 80s. Obviously doing Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, Ninja 3 The Domination, Rage of Honor, Pray for Death, Nine Deaths of the Ninja. There's a lot of ninja movies, folks, and of course the Master TV series. But this, I think, was a bit more of a passion project, is the one we're going to be talking about tonight. Starring Shokasugi, David Essex, Polly Walker, Christopher Lee, Toshiro Mifune, John Rhys-Davies, and of course, Kane Kasugi. We're talking about Shogun Maeda, also known as Journey of Honor, and of course, Shogun Warrior in some places as well. It was a pretty big VHS release out here in Australia, and went with the title, The Adventure of a Lifetime, The Clash of Two Cultures, and The Triumph of One Man. This is definitely his take on a more adventure sort of based storyline. And it is, really is that sort of, in some ways, even a little bit like Shogun. You know, we've got the antithesis of Shogun, where we have characters like his samurai character in this, Daigoro Maeda, who have to travel to Spain in this case and, of course, grab an arsenal of weapons for Tokugawa Ieyasu, played by Toshiro Mifune, and bring it back, of course, to modernize the Japanese army at the time. We're talking about a period that is, of course, heavy in history and, of course, pretty much not only bringing a time of peace to Japan, but a time that is often brought up in film and particularly in Japanese Jidai Geki dramas and stuff like that, where they really look at a lot of the Battle of Sekigahara and that sort of period. We had some amazing people in that period, and particularly in that part of history. You could pretty much see the Battle of Sekigahara as a point that really changed everything, because it led to the Edo period. And of course, that was a period where there was no war for 200 years up until, of course, the Meiji Restoration. Japan went into a time where basically it was still feudal, but they closed their doors and kept their society to themselves in a way that really brought their culture to its highest peak in terms of the times of the samurai, the daimyo, and of course the shogun. And what's interesting in this one, we get a touch of that, and particularly the start of the film, which we're going to go into in a lot of detail tonight. We're going to look at the cast, folks. We're going to look at basically what Kasugi put together, this amazing film, what I've been able to find about it, and touch of course, research and stuff like that, but also just my thoughts on it, because it's one of those ones that's been a bit hard to track down. Haven't seen it since the 1980s, and when I did pick it up, it was just great to really get back into it and really enjoy what I loved about this period. It's good to see, first of all, Shokasugi not playing a ninja. Unlike, I think, most of the movies I'd seen him in up until that point, it was mainly playing those characters, but obviously being in films like, obviously, Black Eagle and Blind Fury and others like that too, so it's great to see him doing different stuff as well. And this is really a bit like the Bond films. It's, you know, going to all different destinations and stuff like that, and I think that's what's really good about this one in particular. It's old-fashioned as well, so We'll have a look at that tonight, folks, but here's where you can catch this show and many others like it.
The number you have dialed has been changed. The new number is...
G'day, my name is Gowan. Follow the Lethal Mullet here on Fandom Podcast Network's master channel at fbnet.podbean.com or subscribe on the Podbean app where you can find all the shows. Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast. Culture Clash, a weekly look at pop culture. New look at Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast. You can also check out The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe from me, the Lethal Mullet. You can also check out this show and all the others like What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, and much, much more. All on FPN. You can follow on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all podcatchers. Make sure you follow me, The Lethal Mullet, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies, and more. Here on The Lethal Mullet Podcast. That's right, folks, we're going straight into the pub tonight because we could enjoy this movie and chat a bit of Shoichi Kosugi and what's been happening in the world out there as well, folks. Gotta say, Shoichi Kosugi is one of the greats. It's definitely somebody that over the years, you know, when I was younger, getting into martial arts and at that impressionable age, his films certainly had a way of portraying the power and the science of these arts. And he certainly was, from not only his actual background in martial arts and karate, and obviously he's done quite a few other martial arts as well, he's also known obviously for his work as a ninja, if you like, in the action films that he's done. But I think the big thing is just the actual commitment to martial training is what really showed me that, you know, you can be as good as these guys, but also get something out of it and get, with martial arts in particular, it's not just the martial science, but it's also, it betters you as a person. Obviously, it's not true for everybody, but it certainly does in the dojo. I think you learn a lot about respect, honor, integrity, truth, and honesty. And it's something still to this day in the dojos that I train in, that we all ensure that we do. And of course, that's one thing. It's about being true to oneself and to, of course, your fellow trainers and stuff like that, and for your instructors, your fellow students, all that sort of stuff. So this film, Shogun Miyata, is pretty much Shokosugi at the peak of his popularity, really taking a sort of a left turn and doing something different, something that you didn't expect. And it certainly is an extravagant turn into a film with, first of all, he's playing a samurai in it, you know, a top samurai working for Tokugawa Ieyasu just after the Battle of Sekigahara, where they've won, obviously, and they start the Edo period in Japan. And it's great to see. It's, again, a different, you know, role. Particularly, we've seen him on the other end of the spectrum playing modern ninjas mainly. But it's not something he hadn't done before. He's done a lot of different times where he's been out in the samurai armor back in the old days doing, you know, reenactments and stuff like that for people, showing them how the armor works, the swords, all that sort of stuff, because he is a master of all that sort of weaponry, whether it be the Japanese weaponry or even the kobudo, which is, of course, the karate, or in this case, the Okinawan weapons from the Ryukyu Islands. All the ones that you've seen in the many movies over the years, where it'd be the Ninja Turtles with all the different weaponry like Sai, Nunchoku, the bow, and of course the katana, which is still to some degree part of Kabuto too, because they do a lot of that sort of work, even though it is traditionally a Japanese weapon, obviously, too. So he's a master of all those, done obviously some other martial arts, but I think we've prominently known him more for obviously the work we see him in these films. And even if you follow his official social media accounts, which you'll find on Twitter and Instagram, he's moved more into writing books now and stuff like that about mythology. And, you know, these are mysteries, action stories, but they're well illustrated as well. And that's why I think it sort of doesn't just hit one demographic. You can enjoy it for what it is as well, from all age groups. But again, it's good to see his passion for storytelling still there as well. Then we've got, in this film in particular, a wide, diverse cast of actors you may have heard of. Then again, some probably not outside of the UK, because there's quite a few UK actors in this one as well, which are predominantly on the BBC, and others that have moved into different areas as well. All right, so let's have a quick look at the plot of this one too. This is set in the 17th century, so the 1600s. Therefore, you know about, obviously, the feudal era coming to an end and the sort of more modern period of Edo coming through. And we see Tokugawa Ieyasu leading his army against the other. And of course, then he wins the battle. With that, the army of the Toyotomi had a supplier of firearms that they were using. In that battle, rain came down. The top of those matchlock and flintlock weapons, the muskets themselves, whatever they were all rained on, and in turning that, they weren't able to be used because, of course, they need a spark to fire. In that turning, of course, the Shogun sent his troops across to the other side, and, of course, they prevail. Then Ieyasu sends his trusted samurai, Maeda, and his very own son. After a failed attempt to kill him, Maeda's family, his kid and wife, are killed. But in his true fashion of being a samurai, he's indebted to his lord no matter what, and takes Yoromuni, played by Ken Kasugi, to where they can find these firearms in Spain. There, they're trying to get the 5,000 muskets to bring back to arm his troops, the samurai as well. Side note here, folks, that the samurai did use firearms. And as the whole trip takes place, as they head to Spain, they are pulled into a turmoil of where they lose not only their finances and the ship are taken away, but they are set upon by assailants. And of course, the intrigue of somebody on that boat might just be against them and might be trying to pull the rug out from under them and take the weapons for themselves. It could be one of the many orders of monk there as well. Who knows? But we also have them lead all the way to, of course, the King of Spain, played by Christopher Lee, Count Dooku himself, of course, and Saruman. And what is great about this one is you get to see him in his element, and really would have liked to have seen Christopher Lee maybe even play the sword fighter in this. But, of course, that's played by David Essex, who is very good in this, actually. And from what I know, he was an actor and also a songwriter, a singer. He plays Don Pedro in this. And, of course, King Philip, played by Christopher Lee. Father Vasco, played by Norman Lloyd, is the one you just don't know whether you can trust or not in this. And as we see going through this, we might find that he just might be a little bit more than he makes himself out to be. Captain of the ship, Captain Crawford, is played by Ronald Pickup, a long-time-running actor of the UK. And he's done a lot of TV and, of course, many other things over there over the years. And, of course, been in Downton Abbey as well. So even my folks might like that one. John Rhys-Davies plays El Zaydan. And, of course, we had Polly Walker from Rome, many other shows, playing Cecilia in this as well. We have Toshiro Mifune in this, in a small role, playing Lord Tokugawa Ieyasu, obviously the lord to which Maeda is the retainer of, and of course his son, played by Ken Kasugi. So what's great about this one, we get to really see in particular two greats brought together on screen for the first time, and I'm sure it was a big moment for show, and same for Toshiro, who for years has played just such amazing roles of all the various films he's been in, whether it be Kurosawa classics or otherwise. You know, obviously he's even played a classic of the period of Sekigahara, Miyamoto Musashi. If you grew up in the 1980s and you were living under a rock, you probably didn't hear the name Shulka Sugi, or better known as, he was born as Shuichi Kasugi. Of course, he's known as a Japanese martial artist, filmmaker, writer. Of course, very, very skilled martial artist. He's studied everything from kendo, judo, iaido, kobudo, aikido, ninjutsu, and of course, Shindo Jinenru Karate Do. He's an all-Japan karate champion, and obviously he's one of the mainstays of the Canon films. Of course, that B-grade film company, the ones that were putting out all these amazing action films, I personally think. Back in the 80s under Menahem Golan, obviously. And the Golan Globus company became known for its ninja, an American ninja and all that sort of stuff too. The great thing about Shulka Sugi was he was really one of the more original and, of course, authentic when it came to what we see on screen. Obviously still very theatrical, but at the same time, it was a little more authentic than just the kung fu in black outfits, as some of those other films were done. Whether in Japan or in Hong Kong films, some of them were just literally adding the karate or kabuto to what was already a martial arts thing itself too. He's been active about from 1974 on, and been in everything from regular film and TV, even in one of the Godfather films, and made his way through there. At the age of 19, he came to Japan to study and go to Los Angeles to cover a business degree or something in economics at one of the universities in LA. And while he was there, he also studied, of course, some martial arts to keep his fine-tuned skills where they should be. And he studied things like Chinese Ching Yi Shuan, Korean Taekwondo, and obviously some other styles of karate that he had done. And they are, of course, Shito Ryu and Shotokan Ryu Karate. These are more Japanese styles, they're less Okinawan, but it's particularly Shotokan. Now, he also has two sons that are involved in martial arts films, etc. too, and that is, of course, Kane Kasugi, who's in this playing Yoromune, and, of course, Shane Kasugi. Now, you can see these guys in some of the other films we're going to be covering here on the Leela Mullet channel. We're going to be doing Pray for Death soon, and both of the boys are in that as well. And, of course, we've already covered Black Eagle, which you can see the both of them in too. And, of course, Ayesha Kasugi is also part of the family. And she used to be part of the women's golf team, senior member of that, and based out at the University of Las Vegas. Now, one of the great things about Kasugi is he sort of had a bit of a hiatus after being in all the action films right through to the mid-90s. And obviously he's done the likes of Pray for Death and films like that outside of the canon circle of films. Then started doing, of course, Black Eagle and, of course, this one, Journey of Honor. Now, of course, it's got multiple titles, which you'll see in the show notes I put up there, folks. It is called Kabuto, Shogun Maeda, and Shogun Warrior. So it's very, very interesting. That's that. Some of his interests outside of martial arts have been the Japanese drumming form called Taiko. And he's also opened his own martial arts acting schools, which you can actually see some stuff on YouTube he's done more recently, where he's going through how to choreograph scenes with particularly speciality to not only katana and wakizashi, but also, of course, we're talking about the daito, the paired swords of the samurai, and, well, ninja probably used some of those too. And also, too, the many other weapons of the ninja. So whether it be the tonfa, the menriki kuzari, kuzarigama, all that sort of stuff, and bring those through into the film. Now, what's interesting is he was in the first film to feature the legendary Ninja To. And the Ninja To is the more straightened version short sword, which is hotly debated whether the ninja actually used this weapon at all. You know? There's a very interesting story about this, and the fact that Revenge of the Ninja was where we first saw it used. The square guard, very straight blade, the full katana double handle at the end to the end of the tang. But what's interesting is that to this day, people still don't know, even with the manuals and stuff that have been handed down from many, many hundreds of years ago when the supposed ninja used these. You know, a lot of debate is out there. There's some that are seen in museums and whether these are just a one-off thing that somebody had, something similar, who knows. But more commonly than not, and even just through my own research and my study of what I've done in ninjutsu, I'm more likely that this was more an idea to get a katana down to a reasonable size so that if they did have to use it indoors with the roofs that are so shorter than ours in terms of length, you know, they're very shallow roofs, very, very low. So, you know, you can't just but literally get a katana on your back and then swing it out from a scabbard. It's going to go straight through the roof. But if that was a wakizashi blade in a katana top scabbard like that, you could. So it's more likely that it's either a cut down katana or maybe a wakizashi put in there as well. And then it also would fool the samurai. Who knows? That's one of the many, many theories out there on that too. But the cool thing is the sword is awesome. And of course we get to see two of them with Leonardo in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as well. So there's all that too. Kasugi, obviously, over the years has done a lot of different stuff. And more recently, in the last couple of years, you can find a number of interviews on YouTube talking about his time in film and what he enjoyed about it and all that sort of stuff. And also made a comeback in 2009 playing the head of the Azunu in Ninja Assassin, where obviously he was up against the actor Rain, who's a Korean pop star. And both did an amazing job in this film too. It's one of the few newer, bigger budgeted films and that particularly with martial arts and this, just the amount of fighting in this is comparable to The Raid, you know. Of course, this is a little bit more on the flight of fancy sort of stuff, but at the same time, really, really interesting. And of course, this old organization that's filled with assassins, and Kasugi gets to play a really good bad guy in this as well. So it's nice to have him back, but I don't think we'll see him acting again. It's not something he's passionate about at his age. He's about 72 now, but you can see him on YouTube talking about all of his weapons, everything from Nine Deaths of the Ninja and on, folks. It's all there. And even some that he's selling now too. So you can go check out some of, the weapons on offer, the authentic Ninja Tor that he's selling as well on there online. Amazing. Big respects to the man, and it is an amazing career. Now, let's get into some trivia here on the Lethal Mullah podcast.
Please hang up and try again.
Now it's time for the Lethal Mullah Cafe as we chill back, relax, and look at the trivia. All the detail, the nitty gritty of the films we are celebrating.
Well, a bit quiet here today, I'd say. Out here in the latte land, that's right, of course. Everyone enjoying a latte, a cappuccino, or my chance to have an even colder drink, a cold brew, folks. That's my choice. Even in these colder months, as we're heading into winter here, it is, of course, autumn here in Australia, folks, and best drink is to have a cold brew. This is a coffee that's poured into, you know, a huge receptacle, a huge 2-litre jug of water, and in between, while it's brewing, it's brewed for 24 hours in chilled water, and then after it's finished. Once it's got that nice aftertaste, that sweetened coffee aftertaste, we chill back. Pour that out over into a glass. You can have it with a dash of milk. You can have it even with a couple of cubes of ice to cool it even more. There's an absolutely most refreshing taste in coffee you'll ever have. And believe it or not, the best thing it is, it relaxes you. Even though it's giving you that boost of caffeine, it's amazing. And in the humidity of Australia, it is one thing to enjoy and love.
You heard him with Canon Films. He entered the ninja. He also gave them revenge and then came back for domination. He is Sho Kasugi, and this time he's playing for the other team. Time travel back to the Battle of Sekigahara and join Daigaro Maeda as he joins his master's son, Yoramune, on a trip to Spain. There to get firearms for their army, they come in line with, of course, a huge shipment and a massive storm, knocking all the supplies aside for then when they take vengeance against David Essex, the criminal mastermind. Starring Chokasugi, David Essex, Polly Walker, John Rhys-Davies, Ronald Pickup, and Toshiro Mifune. Also starring from Dead Poet Society, Norman Lloyd, and of course, Count Dooku himself, Christopher Lee. Oh, and Shogun Maeda. All right, folks, there you go. A little bit taste of what it would have been like. There's a movie trailer now at cinemas near you. Oh, folks, I love it. But I tell you what, I love this film even more. And I'm going to go through some of the trivia that I found, because I tell you what, there's not a lot online. But I'm going to go through the start of the film, my immediate reaction to some of the great stuff that obviously is done on screen. All right, let's go for it. Shogun Maeda opens with a prologue where we see Mifune in the opening, and he's basically at the Battle of Sekigahara. If we get to see it fully laid out. And it's very Kurosawa-like. It's epic. You get all the banners of, obviously, the both sides of the East and West Army. And you can see everything is about to take place, which is going to really set the pace for what's going to be happening in the next 200 years in Japan before, of course, the Meiji Restoration. And in this, we get to see Kasugi as Daigoro Maeda on horseback, which is something we hadn't seen before. And it's great because obviously this time, you know, they were mounted cavalry almost with a samurai. So it's amazing the accuracy with obviously the armor, all of the banners is what really sets it off, those beautiful sigils that we get to see in it too. Interesting to see him playing a samurai leader, I thought, straight away, because quite frankly, we've seen him pretty much by himself most times. Not leading men. He is an assassin in some movies, sometimes a secret agent. So it's interesting. And in a Jidai Geki film, basically a period film, I suppose you call it Chambara, swordplay films, but not really. This one is more a period film, you know, a Jidai Geki. So, you know, huge respects for, trying something a bit different too. But this is definitely the most epic of his films. That's one thing I've sort of written down here that, the immediate reaction is that it's a huge, rollicking epic. And it really is. They succeeded in that. It's far more operatic, like a big adventure film. Uses, different things like, obviously, traps that they lay for things like using matchlock pistols and rifles. I assume it's matchlock anyway, but they're muskets. So, obviously, they need a spark, as I said earlier in the podcast. And when you have events like the divine events, so things like rain, something that's been in Japanese history a lot, you know, the elements come to the rescue, you know, the divine nature of the storms, the winds, the tsunami, all that sort of stuff that they, divine wind, if you like, whatever it is, it'll all come in to save. In this stage, it saves Maeda, because Maeda can use that to his advantage, as the other army has those advanced weapons. So from here we see a charge, we see combat on horseback, and the ground, is where we usually see the attacks for a lot of this sort of stuff. So it's very much like a huge Kurosawa epic, probably not shot quite as well, but it's still just as lovely and beautifully laid out. One thing I do like is that when it gets down to the samurai themselves, it looks a lot more authentic than even some of the more modern films that should have been done too. So you got to say the choreography, bang on, it really was right where it should be. But what's interesting too is getting these two legends together, Toshiro Mifune, a huge, huge part of Japanese film and international film obviously too. But Toshiro has been a hero to so many for years. And then to get basically this new amazing action star and martial artist to star opposite him. In this case, obviously, he's
He's playing a subordinate to Tokugawa Ieyasu, who obviously became shogun. And what's amazing about that is we get them to have a few scenes together, and even the shogun's saying, you know, we have to kind of look towards, maybe we need to look at, you know, upgrading some of our stuff to some of these weapons. After the prologue, we get some great scenes where we get to see Kasugi still in armor training with some of his men, some of his subordinates in this too. And, of course, alongside Yoromune as well. Yoromune is played by, of course, Ken Kasugi, who is now a big action star himself and a fighter as well. You get to see him alongside a very other famous, well, now ninja, as, of course, Scott Adkins, in the Ninja No. 2 movie. So, obviously, No. 1 been out a year or two before they got out the second film with Ken Kasugi in it as well. It's a great film. So he trains his men. The costumes are really, really elaborate and beautiful. The armors, everything, swords are accurate for the time as well. Kasugi had experience with these due to work on samurai shows previously, so where he's gone out and actually shown off the armor in presentations and stuff like that too. After this, we get to see a scene where the Lord, his son, is attacked. And, of course, Lord's son, played by Kane, is able to escape. But in the escape, in the attack, we unfortunately see the demise of Maeda's wife and child. They basically sacrifice themselves to get the Lord clear. So this is a real show of him being a man against an experienced Lord and wanting to fight. He's got eagerness to want to fight, which kind of is a running gag with Ken Kasugi in some of those earlier ones, where even Revenge of the Ninja and Black Eagle, we get to see his fight skills, and even back then he was just as good as he is now. So there's kind of almost a Star Wars Hidden Fortress-like adventure as he gets to get the Lord away from danger, and they obviously have to get clear of where they are. There's some great spear work and yari work in this as well, for those that know the weaponry. The big thing is the tragedy of having his family killed. But it is a beautifully shot scene and shows the desperate nature of what's happening, but also the honour of Maeda, because he knows he has to honour his lord before anything, even for the cost of his own family. From here, after he gets his orders from, of course, Ieyasu, he has to go to Spain. Captain Crawford, an Englishman, takes him on his galley all the way through to Spain. But as they go through this, there's a huge storm which knocks the ship for six, and a huge shipment of jewels and, of course, monies, all that sort of stuff that they were going to spend on firearms in Spain is lost. So when they turn up in Spain, their entire fortune is gone. So, of course, from this makes all of their wealth from Japan disappear. Instead, they still meet Count Dooku. Of course, that is Christopher Lee playing King Philip of Spain. And it's interesting because he's pretty much playing the head of, you know, obviously a country like this, but he's played similar roles in some of the Musketeer films where he usually is the henchman. So it's interesting that he's probably a better swordsman than David Essex, who's the main antagonist in this as well. The classic archetype of sword versus sword style takes place, where we see the Spanish sword versus the Japanese sword in this. And, you know, I think there's a bit of a mythical twist they put on the katana in this, which is probably not accurate. Well, it's definitely not accurate. But it's good to see the two swords and the two different styles coming together. So Miata shares some of these skills with the samurai blade. And basically the lesson from this is drawing fire from water. So about spirit and spirit of the blade. Do not touch the samurai sword because it is his soul. Essex is the main villain in this, and he plays it like a rock star. He really does. There's a cool calm about him. Toughness, a regal sort of toughness, but he's very much that kind of like a Bond villain, I suppose, to some degree. Plays the character Don Pedro. The sharpness of the katana is shown against the Spanish armor as well, in a scene where we see the katana slice through it like butter. And then we see a demonstration of the guns are going to be taking place with this rapid-fire musket system on a big bed of big tubes fired at once. So, again, it's sort of contradicting old technologies versus new technologies, What comes through, of course, is the soul of the person that's going to be using the sort of thing too. And again, this time, there's an attack not only on, obviously, the Lord in Japan, is an attack on the King Philip himself, and Maeda foils the plan. So here they indebted to Maeda, and through that, they are going to give Maeda the guns so he can go back to Spain. What follows after this is a series of attacks, and as obviously Maeda and his team are trying to get back Spain, even when they're also captured by the enemy and put into a prison system too. And this is where we see Yoramune, played by Kane Kasugi, get a chance to find his humility, find his heroism, and also become a man. So it's a real journey for a young lord to learn what it is to be a man. There's some great fight scenes in this. David Essex and Shokasugi get to fight each other in this. Not only at they get to do jousting in this, which is really interesting, seeing a samurai going up against the lance and all that sort of thing. But also a fight on a beachhead too, with cobblestones in front of them as well, which kind of echoed some of those great ones from the Musashi trilogy, Samurai 1, 2, and 3, which of course Mifune starred in as well. You've also got John Rhys-Davies in this, playing basically a Moroccan lord, and he takes them in as prisoners. But also, you can't quite trust him, and neither can the bad guys trust him either. He's out for his own ends as well. What follows is, of course, epic pirate almost action. This is a real swashbuckler and has all of the martial artistry that you've seen in the past from Shokasugi and more. It's his most epic film. And folks, yes, it gets a 5 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale.
G'day folks, hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well, hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.